Charlie. Insurgent Radio Network, Charlie. This is the Insurgent Radio Network. And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. And don't you ever forget our weapons of mass destruction, used and abused and reconditioned equipment yard out here where we bring them in from all over the world. Uncle Sammy only uses them once, man, and sometimes not even then. They're still in crates, a lot of that stuff. So we follow Uncle Sammy around and just pick up the shit behind him that he leaves all over the world and get my Chinese people with their junks and slip them by submarine and other ways into the U.S. and put them out here on our big weapons of mass destruction field out here where we fix them up and bond to them up all winter and get them out here. We've had a hell of a business this summer. People coming in here from all over North America. Yeah. And some even from South America. Gonna get those weapons of mass destruction, take them back home, put them in a cave someplace or disguise them or camouflage them real well. And then when you need them and when the government gets too much for you to take, well, bring them on out, baby. Time for the spring offensive. You know, I heard a study that a lot of the progressives are pushing that the white wing and the racist right and these anti-government people have been committing most of the violence around the country. It hasn't been the Muslims at all. Well, they finally woke up to that fact. People are getting pissed off and they're uncorking all over the place for all kinds of reasons. And as time goes on, you're going to see, and of course you do see, the blacks doing it. The black KKK is going strong. Hell, they had a 12-year-old black kid open up and murdered somebody last night. I forget what town that was in. I saw his picture. Just a little twerp, man, because the black Ku Klux Klan, they're not pulling any punches like the white Ku Klux Klan. They're out there every night doing their thing. Yeah, that's right. Well, I don't know what to tell you. Better watch your ass out there, though. If you're in the inner city and you're walking down the street, you better have something long and hard in your pants, and I don't mean your penis, because you're going to have to use it and walk close to the wall, close to the buildings, not out next to the curb, because those drive-by people get real excited, you know. They just convicted two black Ku Klux Klan loyal members up here in South Bend, Indiana, of shooting up the town a couple of years ago, and the one of the bullets went through a, 3-year-old kid and killed him, and he was a white kid. Yeah. But, of course, nothing ever happens about those kinds of things. They just say, Mr. Policeman, help us. Mr. Judge, will you put him away? Okay, I'll put him away for 100 years. Black, you know, a lot of blacks thrive in prison. I mean, they can live in prison. They can. White men are not good prisoners, not good slaves. But blacks can get along pretty well in prison because they swing both ways, a lot of them, on the race issue. And they get their drugs and their alcohol in the prison. So they say, well, hell, this is better than the ghetto. You know, I get a lot of my stuff from the left, the so-called progressives. And some of it's real good stuff. I mean, when they talk about the economy, a lot of times they make real sense, and I don't know whether Max Kaiser would be considered a leftist or a rightist or what. I think he's just doing his thing like I do my thing, and I'm telling you, go wherever I can to find what's really going on, what really the news is. I don't care whether they say they're right-wing, left-wing, and they've got this radical progressive here. He's got something to say about the Palestinians and the problems in Gaza over there in Israel.
Unprecedented and will impact generations to come. The Israelis feel that they have a right, much as the early Americans did, to murder and kill anybody in this country they claim as their own. It makes no difference, man, woman, child. The report criticized what it called the huge firepower used in Gaza, with Israel launching more than 6,000 airstrikes and firing 50,000 artillery shells during the slaughter. The report went on to say, quote, "The commission is concerned that impunity prevails across the board for violations of international humanitarian law and international human rights law committed by Israeli forces." Oh, they had allegedly committed by Israeli. Oh, no. Well, it wasn't Israel that was really killing hundreds upon hundreds of Gazans. No, it was that group from Tralfamador again. Oh, the report continued, quote, "Israel must break with its recent lamentable track record in holding wrongdoers accountable, not only as a means to secure justice for victims, but also to ensure the necessary guarantees for non-repetition." Judge Mary McGowan Davis, I'll tell you what, you can go back to 1947 and see an endless string of repetitions of slaughter and murder and terror against the people of the Palestinian territories. The report also added, quote, "With regard to Palestinian armed groups, the commission has serious concern with regard to the inherently indiscriminate nature of most of the projectiles directed toward Israel by these groups and the targeting of civilians, which violate international humanitarian law and may amount to a war crime," end quote. The investigators also condemned the Palestinian armed groups for executing those suspected of collaborating with Israel. Really? Why? Collaborators? Does the judge and the commission not remember what happened to collaborators during, you know, World War II or pick a time? The commission, composed of the chair, Judge Davis, and a Senegalese lawyer and human rights expert, was launched a year ago at the request of the Palestinians. And remember how the Israelis went absolutely berserk about the initiation of this investigation. The UN had previously said that most of the 2,139 Palestinians killed in the conflict were civilians. Six Israeli civilians and one Thai national who had the misfortune of being in Israel were killed, along with 66 Israeli soldiers. Israeli airstrikes and shelling hammered the densely populated little enclave, Gaza, causing widespread destruction of homes and schools and hospitals. Gaza fighters fired thousands of rockets and mortar bombs into Israel. Let me see a show of hands. Anybody know how far a mortar shell travels? Yeah, I see a few hands. Not much, huh? And rockets? You mean the rockets that were falling into the desert in southern Israel? However, now, preempting the findings of the UN, and Israeli Israel defended its conduct in that war as both, quote, lawful and legitimate. This report from Israel said Hamas's strategy was to deliberately draw the hostilities into the urban terrain. Oh, I see. The people in Gaza made us kill them, the Israelis are saying. It's their fault. The Israelis put together a 242-page document. In a statement, the Israeli Foreign Ministry said, quote, "The entire process that led to the production of this report was the one from the investigators, was politically motivated and morally flawed from the outset. It is regrettable that the report fails to recognize the profound difference between Israel's moral behavior and the terror organizations it confronted. End quote.
Well, not that I can say that I'm totally sympathetic to Palestinians, because that wouldn't be honest. My main reason for sharing this kind of stuff with you is to make you understand what this government is really like, this alleged government, this oligarchy, this cesspool grandee, la cesspool grandee. Because as far as the Palestinian side caring anything about our struggle, that's ridiculous. They're non-white, and they march in the streets with the Marxists and the communists, and the race mixers. So as far as crying crocodile tears for them, other than the fact of pointing out what bastards our so-called leaders are, is the only reason I talk about the Palestinians. And there's a lot of people out there in the right wing that cry crocodile tears about the Palestinians, but in reality, they don't give a shit either. The best I can say to the Palestinians is, if they got their foot on your neck, cut off their foot. Simple as that. If you don't fight back with any weapon at your disposal, well, you're going to be enslaved. That's all there is to it. That makes the same thing with any other race of people. Well, I've got a nice letter from David Tate, one of the British Fragen, one of the order, doing a lot of time over in Missouri. Notice $25 from you on my account, and it reminds me that I am remiss in to drop you a few lines. Thanks for the gifts. They're appreciated as always. Not a lot of big news with me. Things remain the same old, same old. Enjoying better weather and struggling through the final weeks of springtime allergies and a bit of a fever. Yeah, he has a real bad problem with allergies, and that prison out there in Missouri is really bad. Was able to see Dad, sister, and one of my nieces a couple of weeks ago. It was a nice change. Their old school Presbyterian minister helped drive them out again. Dad seems about the same as last time and is doing well despite the Parkinson's disease, although he does have this good days and bad days. His father used to be the right-hand man of Reverend Butler with the Aryan Nations, and helped him maintain the properties and all that kind of stuff. I met him many times. He's a very, very good man. Very good man. Stood by his son all the way. And his daughter, married, what's the name of the preacher down there in North Carolina? Unreconstructed Southerner, he called himself. Don't tell me, I'll remember it in a couple of minutes. Anyhow, I'm getting a little more attention than usual thanks to the Free Gary rallies. That's Gary Yarborough. There's been some pro-Gary Yarborough rallies in London, which I really don't agree with because I think it makes it rougher on people in prison to stand out too much and everybody know their name. But there's nothing I can do about it. That was decided by other people. While I hear the rallies might have brought in what was needed for an attorney for Gary, I suspect the whole project will do more damage to our brooders in the federal system than good. As you know, I'm never against activism or standing up to Big Brother, but it is rather that I know the mindset of the people who run these places, and I can only imagine it being worse in the federal system than here in Missouri State. That's true. There's so many psychopaths running these prisons. and sadist guards and so forth, that it's a horrible thing, horrible thing. Prisons are run by wannabe cops, misfits who can't get normal jobs anywhere else, and those who enjoy oppressing others. This isn't to say that there aren't more and more who are just working here because they can't find employment anywhere else, but the good ones don't often last long before they get tired of the insanity and quit. Prison administrations in particular do not like to be challenged or exposed by prisoners. In a state prison like Missouri, publicity on the order of Free Gary rallies might bring some success, but the feds are devils of a whole other caliber, and they employ devious methods of retaliation, which is what got Gary sent to Florence to begin with over his suit for the guard assault in Atlanta years ago. I see the same thing happening to Dennis Mahon. They put him in solitary. He's been in there going on 3 months now because somebody handed him a racial cartoon. Now, that was a setup, and I've told him so. They've set him up because they're mad because he appealed his case. He's got a good attorney there, and he's appealing his case, and it's going to take a while to get the decision, but it'll be coming down. In the meantime, they set him up, put him in solitary confinement for a punishment, and now, probably about now, they're going to diesel him out to some other prison. That's another form of punishment. He was fairly close to his brother and family and his aged father, but they're going to ship him probably to the farthest point on the map they can send him, making it hard for even people like me to go see him. That's the kind of people that run your wonderful Uncle Sammy prison. Of course, that's the way it's always been. Prison guards and administrators have always been, for the most part, sadists and people who like to cause people harm. And homosexuals, too. I've been told that Randy Dewey had his parole denied and was threatened that they might keep him even after his 2017 review. I do not blame Gary or the rallies for anything, but suspect it did away from the move. Wait a minute here. But suspect it did Randy no good, even though he has always been a model prisoner. Staying away from the movements and has denounced radicalism. They've long known where Richard Scutari stands, so I doubt the renewed publicity harmed him anyway. Gary has a long, hard road, and he does deserve release. But if federal pigs act like state pigs, then they will hold him back from parole until whatever litigation he is about to file slowly grinds its way through the courts. Without a connected attorney, it can take the average prisoner case 4 or 5 years or more to reach a fruition. My heart goes out to my brooders, particularly those who still are buried under this insane federal sentences. I'm not sure I mentioned it, but on April 20th was the 30th anniversary of my arrest. I find that after 30 years, any doubts or self-recriminations I have harbored or shared with friends or family for my particular crime are over. I know all the arguments and justifications from both sides, but I've always felt that if I had been more disciplined and prepared, the shootout might have been avoided and a life spared. I am guilty of that crime, and I'm under no delusions about ever being released. But 30 years used to be the standard for life sentence in this country, and still is when compared to European standards. So while I have never backed away from my stand for the folk, I have come to feel less burdened. Have you heard anything on this? A friend from overseas wrote, quite a few friends in Europe who are involved in the Azov Regiment in Ukraine. They are an entirely volunteer militia, headed by Audrey Belitsky, who is head of the political groups Patriot of Ukraine and Social National Assembly, There have been nationalists from all over Europe, including Russia, who are going to fight with the Azov for the glory of the Ukraine. They want an independent Ukraine and no part of the European Union. It is commendable to see these men and women fighting for what they believe in, especially those volunteers from other nations. Well, Tom, this is a letter. This is a letter, so take care of yourself and thank you for everything. Give my best to any old rooters and old friends you happen to hear from. P.S. A new system set up by the company that handles electronic banking for Misery prisons allows us now to receive emails, although we have to answer by snail mail. Go to the accesscorrections.com to set up a free email account. Limit is one email per day, 5,000 words or 53 lines, about one page. Anything more is buffered and lost. My nephew tried to send me a list with 90 lines and well below the 5,000 characters. It was cut off at 53 lines. So it should be in block text. The prison mailroom sends us a printout of the email with the evening mail. The system does not record email addresses or mail addresses, so it has to be in the body of the letter for me to get it. A new sister in Ohio sent me an email and $25, but didn't put a contact info, so I cannot reply. There you go. That's from David Tate doing his hard time. Here's a couple of interesting stories for you. A Colorado mom allegedly took her kids on an unusual errand, burglary. The three tykes waited in the car while Melanie Romero entered a retired Weld County cop's home, police said. Romero didn't know the owner was napping inside. The officer confronted her and called the local sheriff. She was charged with child abuse and trespassing. Next story, carrying stolen natural gas in a plastic balloon, what could go wrong? Villagers in Henan Province, China, finally paid the price for an apparently decades-long practice of carrying stolen natural gas from a nearby oil field home in plastic bags. When one exploded in a backyard last week, three people, including a child, were burned. Next story. Good fences make good neighbors. Hurling furniture at them, not so much. A man was so irritated by his downstairs neighbors barbecuing, he threw a chair and a stool over his balcony at the grill. Then he ran downstairs to demand their return, Chicago police said. When cops arrived, the furniture tosser said he flipped out because the grill fumes were bothering him. No arrests were made. Next story. Two burglars who stumbled across a dead homeowner during a break-in hid her body and assumed her identity, police said. The men put the deceased woman's antiques and cars in their own names. They also swiped her bank accounts and her bank cards, cops said. Next story. An ambulance driver in Italy needed a doctor himself after he suffered a heart attack while transporting a 91-year-old stroke patient to the hospital. Massimiliano Sisi completed the trip but collapsed soon after he later had an angioplasty. Quote, I recognized the symptoms almost straight away, but to experience them firsthand is another thing, he told the local newspaper. That's funny. I'm sure it wasn't funny at the time for him. Well, I had a call from the Kansas City Star newspaper reporter. I've talked to her before. She's a pretty nice gal. Wondering to know if I'd been contacted by the FBI about this Mr. Foot situation down there in South Carolina, I guess it is. She said a lot of the racially oriented people had been contacted. I said, no, I haven't seen him. I haven't seen any FBI for about 20 years, maybe 25. She said, why is that? I said, I don't talk. Why waste their gas driving down here from South Bend or Chicago when all I'm going to say is I have nothing to say. And that's because I don't know anything. I told her, I said, if this foot kid had written me or contacted me, I'd freely tell her he did so. I wouldn't be embarrassed to say so. That's why I told her, I said, remember, I hide in plain sight. Makes life a lot easier. I get quite a bit of mail just from regular prisoners in state and federal prisons that want some information and want me to supply them with some material, which I do. I ask them to send me 4 stamps a month, and I'll send them reading material. And most of them really like that. Here's one, here's a sample. Greetings and salutations, my brother. I hope this letter finds you in the best of health and spirits. As for me, I'm still in the human warehouse. Everything seems to be all right here. Haven't heard from you in a couple of months. I really hope things are okay with you and you're moving forward with the message of the white homeland for those of us worthy of that honor. We seem to be the last of a dying breed. Well, I know you're busy with radio show and all, so we'll keep it short. Look forward to hearing from you this month and receiving some new literature. I'm sending 15 stamps. Thanks, bro. Take care. He's in prison over in... I don't see the address. Hope I didn't throw the envelope away. Don't forget, you can go to this accesscorrections.com to set up a free email account, and you can email prisoners. So that's a good deal. Well, here's an interesting article. The stubborn attachment of the traditional Southern whites to the flags, statuary, and street names of the Confederate past is usually explained to the puzzled rest of us as an anthropological quirk or regional ancestor cult which outsiders cannot possibly fathom. But wait a minute. Almost all countries where there have been wars and so forth have the same situation. This article happened to have appeared in a Jewish magazine, and who is more connected to that kind of crap than the Jews? Look, recently returned from Israel where we were confronted with Mossad, the Masada, where all these sort of a Jewish Alamo, where all these guys went to the top of this mountain to stand off the Romans, and they go on and on about it. They do plays about it, movies about it, and everything else. So to say this is just a sort of a Southern cultural thing is ridiculous. All cultures do this. Anyhow, it goes on to say, this is the cult of flags and statuary and street names of the Union Army and its own generals in a war against the Confederacy. The two cults, Union and Confederate, rose in tandem in the immediate aftermath of the war, and in both cases did so for the purposes of mourning the dead, which was a vast obligation. But the two cults also arose because the war had failed to settle any of the underlying disputes over ideas and principles. The contending sides had every reason to go on slugging it out, which they went about doing in various ways. And one of those ways was by conducting a different sort of war, civic and otherwise, over how to commemorate the military war. This was a war of rituals, symbols, a morbid war, a war of cemeteries against cemeteries. And in the morbid war of symbols, the partisans of the Confederacy turned out to enjoy a certain advantage. Hold it. Which was visible from the outset, an erroneous advantage, telling for the long haul. The outset means 1866, when the soldiers from the disbanded Union Armed Forces organized a veterans fraternal order called the Grand Army of the Republic, or GAR. The GAR's purpose was to ensure that sacrifices and sufferings by Union soldiers were appropriately recognized. The GAR was also something of a Republican Party front, and it campaigned for Republican candidates. for a few years, it campaigned for the voting rights of African-American veterans until it gave up. But mostly, the GAR marched in parades and listened to oratory, and these activities attracted hundreds of thousands of members. The GAR campaigned to make Memorial Day a holiday, and on this issue, it enjoyed a lasting triumph. The GAR inscribed itself into the national geography. U.S. Route 6, which runs from California to Massachusetts, is officially called the Grand Army of the Republic Highway, than which nothing else could be grander. General John A. Logan of the Union Army was an early commander of the GAR. And in Washington, D.C., an equestrian statue of General Logan will preside forevermore over the Logan Circle, another triumph. Those were the victories of a conventional fraternal organization. In the South, veterans of the Confederate Army, meanwhile, put together a fraternal organization of their own in the first months after the war, only their organization was more of a, they say, terrorist army than a civic association, was the KKK. Well, it was a guerrilla army, but it did have its fraternal underpinnings. The KKK faithfully served the Southern Democratic Party, the racist party in those days, precisely for the purpose of denying voting rights to African Americans, along with obstructing anything else that might lead to a more pluralistic society, like interracial marriage. The Klan's murders and violence were terrible. No worse than the Union Leagues that were a secret organization spawned in the North before there ever was a Ku Klux Klan. The Union Leagues were vicious. The KKK was more of a response to the Union Leagues. And similarly, the violence of the Knights of the White Camellia, which was almost all Catholic in Louisiana, and other Southern guerrilla groups. And the federal government eventually responded by sending troops. The KKK was suppressed, but the damage was undeniable. A mythic aura attached to the guerrillas. And in the 1920s, when a revived Klan burst back into bloom, the membership expanded to several million. I think it was about 7 million, which made it one of the largest mass organizations in history of the United States. A movement which was not merely anti-black, but was also on the grounds of religious bigotry, they say anti-Catholic and anti-Semitic. Well, I have proof in books and so forth that, like the Knights of the White Camellia, was all Catholic in New Orleans. And even though some places and some lodges would not allow Catholics, many did. Of course, at the time, almost none of the lodges, including the Masons and Odd Fellows and all those lodges, didn't allow Catholics. So it wasn't just the Klan. And there were Jews in the Klan, too, especially down south. There were some Jews in the Klan. So that's something else that's not correct in this article. Jews weren't generally invited in. But sometimes, in some places, the Catholics could not get in, but the Jews could. I've got that in my library here, if anybody wants me to research it again. The KKK in those years was America's counterpart to the fascist movements of Europe. Drunk on its white-sheeted cult of Confederate ghosts and its parades and the sentimental hoodoo about various womanhood and its ability to terrorize. Well, the Klan of the 20s cannot be compared to the Klan of the Reconstruction era, because that Klan was truly a guerrilla operation. The Klan of the 20s was more of a businessman's Klan. People joined it to make money in business and all that kind of stuff, and it was easy to join, and usually the very poor didn't get in. It was the middle class who were joining up. And the Klan and their United Daughters of the Confederacy and their allies went about inscribing their own movement into the national geography. Well, remember, the Klan was much stronger in the 20s in the North than it was ever in the South. All the big cities of the North were full of Klan operations. Oregon, places like that, whole city councils were Klan. Orange County, California, all the mayor, all the city councils were Klan and so forth. Firemen and police, they were all Klan. The original Grand Wizard of the Klan was Nathan Bedford Forrest, the Confederate general who presided over the justice of American Union troops surrendering at Fort Pillow. No, they were not surrendering. They were shooting back, and so they were shot. Dozens of statue busts and official markers celebrated the Grand Wizard were erected across Tennessee and the South, together with street names, school names, and buildings, a Southern rejoinder to the Northern insistence on attaching the names of Lincoln and Grant and other generals to every possible thing. Proponents of the Union and of the Confederacy recruited new armies, this time made of bronze, to go on confronting each other another forevermore. The Bronze Union Army consisted of many hundreds of statues, typically of an ordinary soldier standing at parade rest with his hand on the rifle barrel, together with the equestrian statues of generals and sometimes group statues and friezes, which made to stand guard at town commons, courthouses, and cemeteries across the old Union. The inscriptions on the pedestals of those statues sometimes draw from Lincoln's austere Gettysburg Address, which counts as the founding Union text in the war over how to commemorate the war. Or they quote President James A. Garfield, a major general in the Union Army, who said more pithily and less eloquently than Lincoln, quote, "The war for the Union was right, everlasting right, and the war against the Union was wrong, forever wrong," unquote. Well, I'm sure a few hundred thousand Johnny Rebs would disagree with that. But as I learned from historian Thomas J. Brown, who has composed a short documentary book called The Public Art of the Civil War Commemoration, the Union inscriptions tend to be taciturn. One of the statues of Grant in Brooklyn says, quote, "Grant," unquote, and not another word. Only a handful of the memorials invoke the struggle against slavery. As for the African-American, Negro soldiers, even the greatest of the monuments to their struggles and sacrifices, which is the magnificent frieze on the Boston Common commemorating the legendary 54th Massachusetts Regiment, celebrates mostly the 54th White Commander, though it is true that at the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Arch in Brooklyn, a sculpted black soldier occupies a heroic place front and center in one of the principal statues, holding a pistol and evidently in charge of mortar. The Confederate monuments, on the other hand, these are not exercises in taciturn restraint. The Confederate monuments, some of them speak floridly of love, a mainstay of the statuary erected by the United Daughters of the Confederacy, whose specialty was statuary. A series of statues memorializes Southern white womanhood. Some of the monuments sentimentalize slavery. And partisans of the Confederacy mounted a major effort as late as 1923, which succeeded in winning the Senate support, but unfortunately died in the House of Representatives, to erect a statue in Washington of the Southern Mammy, the slave nurse. Gone with the Wind and the novel and the movie was a product of this sort of quiche and repulsive fantasizing. And the success of Gone with the Wind shows how deeply these ideas and fantasies entered into the popular mind, not only in the South. Thomas Brown, the historian, tells us that quite a few of the Confederate statues contain inscriptions from the tone-deaf Confederate poet Abram J. Ryan, the author of The Sword of Robert E. Lee, whose most quoted lines included these. Gather the sacred dust of the warriors tried and true, who bore the flag of a nation's trust, and fell in a cause though lost was still just, and died for me and you. A cause still just, yes, was at the heart of it. The Southern memorials were erected by people who knew they were celebrating. They were the champions of a nostalgia, and a martial white gentleman, dedicated white women, ladies, and servile and barely human blacks. The cruelest of social hierarchies was their ideal. Slavery was their cause, and even as they tried to avoid saying so, nothing anthropological entered into this, any of this. Well, I don't believe that. The determination to go on waving the flag of the lost cause was an ideological mania. It was a fanaticism swaddled in sentimentality, a fanatical hatred for blacks, which accounts for KKK's terrorism and the cult of the Grand Wizard Forest, and a hatred for the principles of the Union, fanaticism. This was the Confederate advantage. Well, if they hated blacks so much, why didn't they just kill them all after the war? Why didn't the guerrilla armies just start wiping out blacks from one end of the South to another? They didn't do it. What has kept alive the Union passion in the North for its own monuments and rituals and street names? It hasn't. Nobody cares. I roam around Brooklyn, that most 19th century of cities, and I see that for some 60 years after the Civil War, something kept the Union passions alive. Brooklyn's ardor for the respectable pomposities of the GAR and the austere patriotism of Lincoln and the practicality of Grant was immense during those many decades. In Richmond, Virginia, the partisans of the Confederacy erected the terrible and spectacular statuary of Monument Avenue. The imposing and intimidating statue of Robert E. Lee on horseback, the statues of Jefferson Davis, Jeb Stuart, Stonewall Jackson, and the rest, all of them perched on lofty pedestals, as if to suggest a godlike quality. The barbarous Norse deities of a terrible paganism. Yeah, I like that. And in Brooklyn, New York, the partisans of the Union in the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Arch constructed a Union and civic counterpart, a gigantic triumphal arch at the Grand Army Plaza, modeled in part on the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. The arch of the plaza with its equestrian statues of Lincoln holding onto his top hat, and Grant, and the dramatic scenes of the Union soldiers in battle, together with gods and goddesses overhead, as in Homer or Virgil, and other generals standing to the side across the street. All of this meant to define the center of the city in a more or less religious manner, and Brooklyn did more. A magnificent bronze Ulysses Grant, rumpled, exhausted, and matter-of-fact, presides from a still more magnificent horse, proud, powerful, huge, over the Grant Square in Crown Heights. A bronze Henry Ward Beecher, the abolitionist preacher, stands erect in the Brooklyn Heights Greenwood Cemetery, memorializing the Union soldiers. The Brooklyn streets bear the Union names of General Slocum, Warren Butler, Sherman, and Garfield, Admiral Farragut, Clara Barton, a Civil War nurse who founded the Red Cross, Lincoln, and the Union itself, though in some kind of mistake, a General Lee Avenue has been allowed to amble past the Verrazano Bridge. As if the entire borough were a battlefield memorial. Only who remembers any part of this in our time? Who in the North? French patriotic parades march regularly under the Arc de Triomphe on the Champs-Élysées, and plainly the arch of the Grand Army Plaza was designed for similar events in Brooklyn. One glance at the arch should suffice to tell you that when the architects and sculptors designed it and the workmen erected it, their keenest hope was that on the 100th anniversary of the Union victory or the 150th, a parade of many thousands of people would pass under that arch, triumphantly heading into Prospect Park for a victory picnic and a delightful afternoon of windy oratory. Blue-hatted Civil War reenactors, accompanied by marching bands and rippling of banners and the applause of measureless Democratic crowds. This was certainly the idea. On the 150th anniversary came and went a few months ago, and nothing of the sort took place. The Civil War monuments of Brooklyn and of the towns all over the North survived mostly as stony relics of a lost age. They resembled the Hellenistic ruins of the Middle East that are getting destroyed right now by the Islamic State. Well, wait a minute here, boss. Brooklyn's Grant Square and its grandiose statue, three stories tall, plays an insignificant role in the life of modern Brooklyn and New York and the United States. The street names, meaningless to everyone here, finally is the reason why in the South large publics have maintained a stubborn attachment to the symbols and the quiche and the rancor of the Confederate States of America, have maintained the attachment until today and will doubtless go on doing so into the future too, even after their political defeats are just now. The nostalgics of the Confederacy have kept up their ancient attachment because in the war over how to commemorate the war, the heirs of the Union, most of them gave up the fight long ago, discouraged or distracted or bored or ignorant. Or was it arrival of immigrants in the late 19th century and the 20th century that broke the cords of the Union memory? The immigrants, like my pious great-grandfather, who brought to Brooklyn a grudge against the Tsar, but maybe knew not so much about Jefferson Davis, but maybe knew so much about the weight of the time, the GAR did not survive the death of its last member in 1956. In any case, the people who ought to have regarded themselves as the sons and daughters of the Union somehow allowed their attention to wander. Quietly and unconsciously, they renounced the customs of the Grand Army of the Republic and its commemorations, renounced the original meaning of the Memorial Day and its drums and bugles and the attention to the Union monuments, renounced the idea of trying to impose on heirs of the Confederacy a set of ideals. Okay. Where did I go here? I lost my place again. Pulls under here. Yeah, there we go. Renounce the cult of Union memory that used to thrill to the names of Lincoln and his generals. Renounce the patriotic displays that were anti-Confederate displays. And these several silent, soft renunciations have turned out to be, for the United States, a grave, consequential error. And if you didn't like it, you shouldn't have had a civil war. That's the way I look at things. Just because the North changed a lot in many ways doesn't mean the South is going to forget their past. And I don't think you're going to see it go away very quickly. My opinion of all this statue business of all these generals and horses and swords and all that stuff is simply a method of implanting some type of phony heroism into the minds of young boys at an early age to where they get the idea when you go marching off to war, you're going to be a big hero. They never show a pile of dead Federals or dead rebels on the ground with their legs blown off and their heads blown off and like that. If you're going to make a reality piece on the war, then that's what they should do, is make it just exactly the way it is and not this pagan worship situation. So anyhow, that's my opinion. And most of those generals that they parade into these big statuaries caused the death of hundreds of thousands of men, and yet they can be all excited about putting one prisoner in a federal prison to death or shooting him up with poison, and like Timothy McVeigh and like that. That's Timothy McVeigh, no matter how bad he was, no matter how many people he killed in Kansas City, or he was, he's nothing compared to the generals in the field and how they command thousands and thousands of men to die for the corporations and usually nothing. What was that general in the first war in the Middle East there? I think that, what's his name, was his one of his security guards. Yeah. But these guys are guilty of really the murder of thousands of soldiers and civilians. They make big statues of them. So I'm not upset when they bring the statues down. You want to get rid of them, melt them down, that's fine with me. I see the Pope now says we can no longer turn our backs on Mother Earth. What a hypocrite, son of a bitch. The Catholic Church has always turned itself on Mother Earth, against Mother Earth. Only a few people that happen to have been in the church have done anything to protect the environment or nature or anything like that. In fact, the whole concept of the Christian religion is to discount natural things and discount nature and be over it and kick its ass and take advantage of it, steal everything from the earth and not put it back. And then the Pope has the unmitigated gall to say we can no longer turn our backs on Mother Earth. Oh, California Right to Die bill stalls on religious opposition. There they go again. God darn. A bill supported by the late Brittany Maynard died in assembly committee after a strong opposition voiced by the Catholic leaders and disability activists, because you cannot take your life. The state has to take your life, or we'll put you in the military and take your life, or something. Or we'll put you in the street and let the niggers take your life. But you, no matter how much pain, no matter how much suffering, how horrible your existence is, you can't take your life. Well, people should just take care of it. You know, you can get the chemicals, and I think that on the internet, just get the chemicals and do it. Fuck the state, fuck the church, fuck everybody. It's your life, it's your life. You want to get out of it, do it. Nobody's business but your own. Hey, not so fast on taking down that Confederate battle flag. The South Carolina House opened debate Wednesday on the fate of the Confederate battle flag, with the political leaders of both parties hoping to do what would have been politically impossible only weeks ago and remove the flag from its perch near the State House. Lawmakers have been expected to consider more than 20 amendments put forward to stop the rush to remove the flag and send it to the nearby Confederate Relic Room and Military Museum. Wow. But soon after debate started on Wednesday morning, about 24 proposed changes were withdrawn. That offered the possibility of a faster resolution than some had expected. But enough amendments were pending that it remained unclear how the day would play out, legislative officials said. The truth is that any amendment either leaves the flag up or keeps us in legislative session all summer long, unquote, Representative Norman D. Brannon, a Republican who has called for the flag's removal, said Tuesday. Well, I'm for removing all the flags, except my non-equal flag. Some of the withdrawn amendments had called for other Confederate symbols to fly in lieu of the battle flag. Well, it would seem like the battle flag would be the last one you'd want to take down, because that is commemorating all the men, no matter who they were, that died on both sides. Should. Another had been expected to demand that the American flag, which flies atop the State House dome, be placed upside down. Well, there you go. Legislators say they expect that some amendments could receive backing from dozens of House 124 members, and they have also expressed confidence that they would defeat any calls for changes to the legislation. The Senate overwhelmingly voted this week to take down the flag, and the House voted on Tuesday to speed up the debate. Quote, "We want a clean bill. No flag, no flagpole, no amendments," said Representative David J. I Love the Negroes Mack, that's the third, a Democrat. About an hour before the House was scheduled to convene Wednesday, just three demonstrators stood near the battle flag. All of them demanded its removal. I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'm not going to be able to relax until I watch that thing come down, said Sean McGinnis, a 43-year-old artist from the Columbia area. If it's still up by the end of the week and it's not coming down, I would be heartbroken. Well, let's stand by for your heart to break. Still, the House debate is expected to be contentious and emotional, with the shooting of nine black wonderful Saint members of the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston spurring action. I wanted to dedicate it to the seven Negroes who got blown away in Chicago last week. They wouldn't even listen till May. Governor Nikki R. Haley, a Republican and a non-white with roots in Asia, has called for the flag to be removed. What's she got to lose? I want to call for the flag. And in what country did she come from? Wherever she came from, her family, let's call for taking down their flag. Let's call it the War of the Flags. She said the shooting had forced the state to recognize that the flag, while a symbol of Southern history to some, to others is deeply offensive. Oh, that's too bad. Protesters on both sides have gathered outside the State House throughout the week amid tightening security, and the lawmakers say they received thousands of emails and telephone messages about the flag and its future. Well, I'm not going to go on from there. Whether they take it down or not has very little difference in what's happening to the white race in this country. It's going down the tubes, and they're worried about a flag. Strange people, these white Aryans. Now they want to fly the Christian flag above the U.S. flag. Now they're going to have a big fight about that. Oh, jeez. But that's more the truth than anything. The Christian and all these churches and the church industry really run this country and run politicians, whether they're Jewish or whether they're Christian or whether they're Muslim or what they are. The religious industry wants to run everything and tell everybody how to live. Well, now we're graduating to city seals we got to get rid of. The mayor of a village in New York State is defending his community's seal amid increased scrutiny spurred on by the debate surrounding the Confederate battle flag, and insisting that the seal depicting a white man seemingly strangling a Native American man is not a racist. And the opponents that wanted to get rid of it said it'd be all right if the Indian was choking a white man, but this is not right. A white man choking an Indian, a Mongol, quote, "If they looked at the seal and went with an opinion based solely on what they're looking at, I could understand why people would have concern about it," Whitesboro, New York Mayor Patrick O'Connor said, told the Village Voice, "I think you have to take all the facts into consideration. And if people take the time to do that, then they reach out to us, they do the research themselves. It's actually a very accurate depiction of a friendly wrestling matches that took place back in those days." Right, his hands around his throat. That was a friendly, why don't white people get some balls and just say it the way it is? Yeah, he's choking him, so what? Kiss my ass. That's enough of this crap for me today. I got to get out of here. 14:05, and I have nothing to say. And like I said, the newspaper reporter asked me on the phone today whether the FBI had been around. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier in the show or not, but they've gone around to all these others like Don Black and all these guys. I said, "No, I haven't seen any FBI for about 30 years. She said, "Why is that?" I said, "Well, I don't talk." If I'm repeating myself, it's because I'm an old fart.
I do hate Bettman Lingle, and I'm going to tell you why. Because every time I go to the movie, one of the two of them, bitches come and go, "Earth Day and Save the Planet and Ozone and the whales and no save the water, all that old bullshit." Do you know how much nerve it takes to say you're going to save Earth? How much nerve? Earth is saving itself. I haven't noticed. Earth is fighting back with the earthquake here. Earth don't fuck around. That big wind shit in Miami. Tan up shit. Just tan up all the white areas. I was out there trying to help the wind. When it rained in L.A., remember it rained for 30 fucking days. I wanted to be 40 days and 40 nights. It was raining. Only fucking up the flood in the white areas. The ghetto was so dry. White folks was drowning. I said, "I thought y'all could swim." Niggas throwing rope, ain't tied to nothing. "Here, catch this." White trash on top of trailers, barefooted, hollering help. Help! Eating jelly sandwiches. But I blame it on white folks. Y'all deserve that because you move in strange areas trying to get away from niggas. Houseboats all up on the hill, living up on the hill. The mudslide come and bring your ass straight to the ghetto. Go to sleep in the hills and wake up and go, "Oh, in the ghetto." No, but Earth is fighting back. See, Earth has its own natural, like, water and gravity. Earth could stop and shake us off the way a dog shakes off fleas. Earth would defend itself. That's why there are no more dinosaurs. Them dinosaurs are some big motherfuckers. I thought they was bad, but they ain't no more of them. This Earth don't fuck around. We better get with each other. It ain't gonna be no more us. It's them worried about all the other shit. Oh, the whales are this, that, the fur, and all that old bullshit. Now that niggas can afford to wear fur, want to make a law against it. No, don't wear fur. Fuck you. I'm wearing fur pajamas. Fuck you. I blame it on white folks. This whole thing, y'all started out fucking it up. The Indians told you about the shit, but you didn't listen. You started out fucking this shit up, chopping down trees to build boats to go get niggas. And now that the picnic is over, you want us to help recycle. I'm not recycling shit. That's me on the freeway. I throw shit out there all goddamn day. I ain't recycling that goddamn thing. Any Latinos here? I didn't talk about the Mexicans. Let me please. Good. Good. Let's get this Mexican shit straight. L.A. is Mexico. Don't let the white folks fool you. That's Mexico. If you don't believe it, take your Mexican parents to the border. They run right back to Los Angeles. Didn't the Mexicans have, in L.A., they had some, what's your holiday, Cinco some shit? What is it? Cinco de Mayo. Oh, you scared white folks. Oh, thousands of white Mexicans came to downtown L.A. Thousands of them. Got out the same car. Scared the fuck out of white folks. And I like Mexicans in L.A. I don't know about here, but Mexicans, I like you guys. You guys are independent. You'll sell pencils, oranges on the side of the freeway. You don't give a fuck. Mexicans won't ask you for directions. They ain't asking nobody for shit. Niggas used to be like that before they got integrated, got like white folks and went crazy. Because we've been all kind of things. We've been colored, Negro, Black, African, and all that shit. It's true. It's going to be all kind of names. I'm a bitch. How come we just can't be free? That's what I want. Totally. I'm going to see that shit. I'm taking every motherfucker with me. We ain't going to be free. We're going to be dead together. How about that? No justice, no peace. I said, fuck that. We don't get peace till we get even. Fuck that bullshit. I'm going to get even, motherfucker. And then we'll get some peace after I do some shit. Where's